Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday, halfway through another week, and here it is, me, Barry, on New Visions Radio with another book and a chat. Well, when it comes to things like autism, ADHD, especially in those sort of things, people's knowledge is actually very limited. I mean, for a lot of people, it's just the film Rain Man, for instance. In my own case, my grandson, who's coming up to five, he has autism, so I do know a bit about it and everything that some of the things affected by it. My guest today, well, she's written, she's done so much. It's where do you start with her? She's not just been there, done it, and got the T-shirt. She's got the shop from the T-shirt as well. She's a writer. She is an author. She is a story editor, a creative director for 20 years of experience, with a graduate of the radio and television arts programs and stuff like that. But for the last recent time, she has been creating a series of books which is helping young children develop the understanding of neurodiversity. Well, neurodiversity, what's that? We'll find out. I better introduce my guest, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Sarah Furlong. Hi, Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me today.
It is a pleasure. Now, neurodiversity is not a term I'd heard it, but it's not a term I was used to. When you hear, when you hear about autism, against neurodiversity is actually, how can we say, it's a range of differences between brains, and it might not just be children, is it? I mean, when you get old, for instance, your brain, the people's brains fail. Our sparks just aren't going down the right track, if you like. You know, we know what we do. That's why you walk out of a room and walk back in again to try and remember what you went in there in the first place. Because, but how would you define the difference?
Absolutely. So neurodiversity is all of us. We all make up neurodiversity. So everyone's brain is a little bit different, and how we see the world is what neurodiversity is. And neurodivergent are brains that see the world a little bit differently. They're not the neurotypical, the ones that most of us can identify with traits. The neurodivergent are the ones who, like autism, ADHD, severe anxiety, our brains are modeled a little bit different than the neurotypical.
And as I said, I mean, it's not any age. It's
everybody and every age.
and I think that's, to my mind, when I was sort of reading about about your stuff and that's something that definitely needs to be understood and to stand out, because otherwise you end up getting put in little boxes, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. Now, you sort of wrote these set of books is Every Brain is Beautiful, which is a great title, because your own son has autism and ADHD. I mean, two together, that's
not uncommon.
I know it's almost like different parts of the brain are being affected by it, but as you say, it's not something. I mean, I have enough trouble with autism, right? You know, I make no bones about it. You know, it's very hard to understand and to comprehend. But if you have that with ADHD as well, I mean, why you did this was that you were trying to find something to explain to your son about this. And there was nothing there. So you said, I'm going to do it myself. Is that basically it?
That was exactly it. And everything you're saying, you're not alone. Most people, these terms are big, heavy topics, and they don't understand them themselves. So how do you explain to a child who gets a diagnosis, or their sibling does, or their classmate does? How do you explain it to them in words that they can understand and that isn't scary? Because all of these different traits are not all deficits. There's lots of positives, And we have to find ways to explain to a child, your brain is different. It's unique. These are things that might be hard. These are things you might be good at, so that they walk away feeling good about themselves and not have a weight that this is something terrible that I should be worried about. It's just your brain's different, and that's okay.
See, it must be very hard to explain, you know, to a child, to your son, whoever, without, you know, on this sort of thing, without focusing on, you know, the downside, the deficits. It must be really, as why you wrote it, there isn't anything there. When I was looking at that, you know, looking at this sort of thing like that, I thought, well, I can remember growing up, and you had Aesop's Fables, the Just So stories, you know, how the leopard got his spots and all this sort of stuff, which in a way explained human characteristics and behavioral things in a way that children could understand. And I think it's great the way, because you've actually used animals, haven't you, for the characters in a lot of it.
Yeah, I use animals or completely nondescript characters so that no child looks at it and is like, oh, well, I'm not a boy or I don't have blonde hair, so this isn't about me.
Right.
It's making sure that any child can see themselves or others reflected without putting, because especially when kids are autistic, they tend to be, they see things very black and white in many cases. So you didn't want them to be like, oh, well, I'm a girl, therefore this isn't about me. So I removed all that and used animals and little colorful characters to make sure every kid could see them self-reflected.
When you've started writing this wonderful series, did it take you, I mean, the fact that you used the animals, and obviously, as you just explained, why you used the animals, because you don't want to pigeonhole, you know, people see the reflection, it doesn't affect them, or it does affect them and stuff like that. Was that something you set out to do, or was that by experience that you learned that doing it this way has a better response?
So it's it was something I set out to do on purpose from experience. So having written for children for a long time in many different ways, there's a benefit to kids being able to see themselves in something. And sometimes kids get so caught up in what that other child looks like that they can't see that reflecting themselves. It also makes it feel so it's not scary, right? It doesn't have that kind of feeling to it. These animals are soft, they're cuddly, they're friendly, and it's a lot easier for children to digest this cute little bunny doing these things as opposed to a child looking upset. It's easier for them to use an animal or something cute to feel that.
Now, when you start off, obviously, you started and designed it. Did you start off designing it for younger children, sort of, you know, I don't know, preschool or first or second year school? Was that the idea, to try and catch them at that development stage?
100%.
Yeah. Good.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to get kids that were just starting to interact with other children.
Yeah.
So kids that were just joining a classroom and might see kids who act different to them. Like, my hope is that a teacher, you know, in preschool, in kindergarten, in first year, reads this to their class to help them understand that just because someone is different to you, it doesn't mean that they don't want to be your friend or that they don't like to do things. Everybody experiences the world differently. So by the time kids kind of get, you know, that 8, 9 years old, they've already really formed a lot of opinions. So my hope was to get there before they form those opinions to help them better understand that we're all different.
Which is, yeah, with my grandson, obviously, he's just started his his first year at school, kindergarten, and there are some issues with some of the other children, obviously, because and a lot of it is that two things. First off, the other children don't understand it, despite what the teacher might explain and stuff like that. But the worst thing for the actual child itself, and I'm sure this is something you've found out, is the helplessness they feel because they can't communicate.
100%. Absolutely. That is a huge problem, is that they can't communicate sometimes effectively, and other children can't understand how they communicate.
Right.
And that's where, you know, it's important for the adults to really understand. And a lot of them still aren't properly trained or don't really understand either. And that's where you see a lot of kids getting in trouble for behavior.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's how they're communicating, because they can't say, I don't want to do this anymore, in a way that an adult can understand. So they throw their paper on the ground, and then they get in trouble for doing that.
Exactly.
So that was sort of my hope with this, is to explain, like, you know, these come out of a certain place, and here's why. Because also the adult reading it with the child, I really want them to be able to understand too. Because I've had so many adults be like, where was this book when my child was young?
Exactly.
I didn't understand these things.
Exactly.
You know, it's not
totally.
Just for the kid.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think that is a very important thing. I mean, my grandson's at a normal school, which I have severe worries about that. I can understand why and everything, but at the back of your mind, you're thinking, you know, is he going to get picked on? Is this going to happen? Mm-hmm. Is he going to do a tantrum? You know, or stuff like that. But
yeah,
these days, a month ago, and they have little tablets now, little computer tablets. But obviously, you know, but and it's great that if they want to do something, they want to drink, they want to go to the bathroom, they want to do that, they go and they press the button on the tablet. They know they can.
Absolutely.
They can communicate. To them, that's something, hey, I can do something that person can understand. And I think that's great. I mean, you know, people say, well, can't they sign language? No, because that's not. You know, some people it might help with, but it's not that part of the communication. It's the brain getting in gear, for want of a better
100%. Absolutely. And the augmented communication, the AAC devices, like an iPad,
right,
is absolutely huge. And it's so important, because for so long these kids were denied communication, because if they weren't speaking verbally, it was like, oh, well, they don't understand. And there was this feeling that, you know, because you couldn't communicate out, nothing could go in. And the AAC has been a great way for those kids to be able to say, no, I am done this activity. I want to drink. I need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Because everybody deserves the right to communication, which is something that is super important, especially children at that age who are already having a hard time transitioning to a school environment.
Yep.
Not being able to communicate makes it infinitely more difficult.
Yeah. What, when in the, you know, because it's a series of books, it's not just a one, is it? You've got quite a few of them. Have you covered illness at all? Because my grandson's had a couple of bouts of pneumonia. And croup, especially, because I can remember having croup when I was little, and I didn't understand where the dog came from that was barking out my mouth.
Yeah, I haven't done illnesses yet, but I actually have a list of requests from people, and that is one of them that is on my list to do, is explaining about, you know, going to the doctor when you don't feel well and how that is.
Yeah.
I've covered a huge range. My most popular are autism, ADHD, and something called ADHD, which is when you have both of them together.
Okay.
So that explains to kids how their brains compete, because autism generally likes routine and structure, and ADHD has impulses and novelty, which are kind of the opposite. So it's really hard when you have both of those at the same time. So explaining to a child what that is. Anxiety is another one that's one of my top sellers, is explaining what anxiety is to a child who's experiencing
it.
And then big feelings is my newest one. So explaining to kids what it is when you have these big feelings and big emotions, and that, you know, every feeling is just a visitor. It's always going to leave to make room for a new one.
Good,
so reminding kids
good,
that,
good,
you know,
good,
if you're feeling like that.
That is so right. That is so good to, and the way you've described it, that is something that does indeed, yeah, why, a great way of putting it. What about, and I've seen you covered this a bit, which I thought, to my mind, I questioned this, and then I sort of read a bit. giving children the importance of a label, giving children a label. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, a lot of people absolutely. Will, a lot of people turn around and say, oh, no, that's making them feel out of it. You might as well have a sort mm-hmm. of a red flag sticking out of their head sort of thing, stuff like that. But yep. it's not that, is it?
Absolutely. It is the complete opposite, because your child is going to be labeled one way or the other. So they either get the proper label and get the support they need. So they get labeled autistic and get support, ADHD and get support, or they get labeled a bad listener, disruptive kid, can't pay attention, not good at schoolwork. So they're going to get labeled. If you can give them the proper label, then they get support. Otherwise, they end up getting labeled in negative terms, which are terrible for self-esteem.
Right. One of the things I know that's encouraged for children like this, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you bring it into your book, is the need sometime for that child to take a break.
100%. That's a huge thing. Absolutely.
Yeah, all of them talk about that.
Yeah. So Every Brain is Beautiful talks about how all of our brains are different, and some of us like to play with other kids, and some of us like to be apart. And that doesn't mean you don't like other friends. It just means our brains need a break. And then especially when I get into specific diagnosis, talk about how the supports and the breaks are so important. And, the sensory supports for someone that's autistic, that you have, your headphones if you need them, yep. that you have something that you like the feel of in case you need that kind of thing. So giving yourself the break is incredibly important, and something that a lot of teachers have a hard time doing, giving the kids that you need a little break and you need some more time to do an activity. It's one of the biggest challenges for kids, for sure.
It's interesting you mentioned sensory, because I'm sure I read somewhere mm-hmm. about you creating these wonderful sensory boxes, and they are yes. so simple, and yet they mean so much to these kids. My grandson's into bubbles at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, bubbles are a great one.
So what I got as part of his Christmas present, I got him a lava lamp.
Oh, great idea.
I mean, I was a little bit worried amazing. About, the burning or knocking, but, they know enough to be there. But just watching the shape that, because it is like bubbles in a way with the lights going up there.
Absolutely. And it's soothing and it's calming.
Yes.
And not like there's so many things to be said for something like that. It's slow moving and it's relaxing. And finding those things that work for a child, because it works for one, doesn't mean it's going to work for others, but finding those things are infinitely important to support somebody's sensory system. Like my son, he needs, he wears something called loops, and they look almost like our little earbuds.
Yeah.
And we're going somewhere loud, he just pops them in his ears. So he doesn't have big earmuffs, he just has the little ones, but they just minimize the sound, and it makes all the difference. It keeps him from getting dysregulated. So, you pick up on things that work, and you trial and error, you find things that support the sensory system.
Now, all the children that I've met, they make up for the lack of speech in music quite often.
Yes.
They mm-hmm. love music. Absolutely. They love the form. They love the sound. He could speak. Well, he can't speak. He can say, he says words. He says more words than they said he'd ever do. But mm-hmm. the words might not be the right words for what he's trying to say. If he's kept doing colours, he might suddenly do a number or something like that. But that is going back to the brain not quite firing not going down the right underground path sort of thing. Instead of taking the Piccadilly, it took the Northern.
No, absolutely. And the thing with speech is we put so much emphasis on spoken words, but if we think about how we communicate so much, it's not spoken words.
Yeah.
Like, we text each other all the time. People send an email. There's so many other ways to communicate. But when it's a child, it's like speak, 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 speak. It's like, no, communicate. It's not about speaking. It's about communicating. And whether that be they type, They use an AAC with images that they can use. They learn sign language, whatever that is.
Yep.
It's about encouraging communication that is effective, because there's nothing more frustrating than not being able to communicate what you want or need.
Exactly. But then if you look back, you know, prehistoric times and stuff like that, communication was quite often with music. Yeah, the stories that were told to music or what have you. So it was there before speech in many ways.
Well, music enters our brain differently, right? Like, music and speech are not the same thing. Something that you hear in a song, that's why so many, for teaching small children, songs are so important, and repetition and rhyming, because that goes into your brain in a totally different way than a spoken word does.
I mean, obviously, I'm going back a lot of years, but you know, in growing up, that was part and parcel of it. We sing along the nursery rhymes and that. I mean, you know,
absolutely, and that still is huge.
Yeah,
for sure.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So how many actual books in this series do you have right now?
So this one's got 8, I believe, right now, with Every Brain is Beautiful as the kind of anchor. That's sort of where I recommend people start, because it just teaches about neurodiversity. And then I go through, you know, I have anxiety and giftedness, OCD, ADHD, autism, ADHD, big feelings, anxiety. So kind of the full spectrum of it. And like I said, I'm always adding to the collection. I love to meet with people and hear what they're looking for, and then create a book based on those needs.
Yeah. Giftedness is an interesting thing, because it's the reverse, if you like, of what we've been talking about. It's
absolutely.
It's, you know, it's a struggle for children, because they, you know, they don't put up with fools.
Yeah.
So I think.
Well, and it's also it's a tough one, because you get you tell a child they're gifted, and then this immense pressure sits on their shoulders. Where they have to feel like they have to be perfect at everything that they do. And gifted does not mean perfect. It means your brain processes stuff differently.
Exactly.
But you might be great at music and terrible at math.
Yeah.
And that can be a really big pressure for kids to understand, which is where that book came from, was this, you know, understanding that just because you're called gifted, don't force yourself to be perfect and better than everybody else and 100% on every test, because you don't have to.
No. Again, you know, not so much perhaps these days, but you go back not that long ago, and there was so much pressure on children from parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
100%.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter's a gifted pianist, so I make her sit on that piano for 10 hours a day, you know, till the blood comes out of her fingers.
Yeah, it's, I mean, back when I was a kid, I was identified as gifted, and this feeling of like pressure, especially from my peers, right? Being like, what'd you get on the test? Did I do better than you?
Yeah,
and
it's
like, oh my God, like, I'm like, why? I don't have to be perfect. And that was always this feeling. And I'm like, you know, I didn't want other kids to feel like that growing up, right? So that's where that book came from, that perspective. So.
Yeah, see, I used to get, and my mother still, my mother's what, 96 now, and she still reminds me when I speak to her that, you know, well, you used to come up with your reports, and you always used to say, he's got it there, but he doesn't use it, sort of thing, you know, must try harder, sort of thing.
Yeah. We've all heard those ones, I think.
Yeah, indeed. Obviously, you know, you do a lot of other stuff as well as these books, but these books seem to be, obviously, when you started it, it was family, but now it's become a passion, and it must get so many comments back from families, parents, what have you. It must make it all worthwhile in so many ways.
It does. And you know what I hear from so often is adults who are autistic or have ADHD that read these books and are like, yes, someone finally said it in a way that I can identify. And that to me is the most important thing, is that it's not just, you know, parents wanting to talk to their children, but people who are experiencing it themselves can look at this and say, you got it right. And to me, that's huge. And that makes me feel really good to know that my perspective on how I talk about it does reflect the true experience of being one of these different types of neurodivergent.
You know, as a sort of grandfather who've sort of come into this in recent years, it is something that while I had an understanding, I didn't have a deep understanding, and I found it hard to sort of comprehend this sort of stuff. And
Absolutely.
books like yours, what is needed? And as you say, not just for children, it could be people who are sort of a lot older in life, with things like that. So
Yeah,
thank
doesn't want to interact with the children.
yes.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for writing this set of books. It's I'm sure, and I know my daughter and her mother are listening to the show because I told them you were wrong. So I will thank you so much for writing this set of books, and I'm sure it's only gonna sort of help more and more people as you widen the expanse of things you cover. But time is beating us, so what I'm gonna do now is hand the show over to you, so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your books.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. Usually the best place for people to find my books is on Amazon, because no matter where you are in the world, you can find them there. So you can search under my name, which is Sarah Furlong, Sara, no H on the end of my name, or Every Brain is Beautiful. If you search that on Amazon stores anywhere in the world, you will come up with my book right away. It's usually the top search. That's probably the best way, or just Google Sarah Furlong and you'll find me pretty quickly that way as well.
Do you know, I wonder, can you get books from Amazon in the Amazon?
I mean, that is a great question. I feel like
I
you
just thought when you
probably.
said that, I just thought, go to the Amazon. If I ever get to the Amazon, I'm going to see if I can
I'm
order a
always
book from
amazed by
Amazon.
where people buy them. Where people buy them from. When I look at my report, I'm like, oh, they're
Yeah,
all over the world. That's why
I
I
know.
recommend that. Shipping from Canada, from where I am, isn't
Yeah.
always that easy, but for as accessible that way too for anybody to find them.
Indeed. So, in fact, I just sent something to my mother, and she says, "Oh, it's going to cost you a fortune to send it back to England." And I said, "No, I'll get it on eBay UK, and I'll just pay for the postage from eBay UK to your house."
Right? There you go.
Yeah.
Got to work around the problems, right?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Sarah, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Great success to you, and thank you so much, from people like me who you're providing such a wonderful service. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. How about that? Sarah Furlong. And we've been talking to her about mainly about her set of books, Every Brain is Beautiful. It's sort of linked with autism and ADHD and lots of other bits and pieces, as you heard during the show. And I think what I do tend to do is I upload the shows the following month. So the end of this month's shows will be uploaded on the website there. But I'm sure a lot of people. I know already there are people being sent links, even though I haven't done the links yet to this, but I'm sure it will. Anyway, that is it for this week. I will be back on Sunday with my normal music shows from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. We have Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century, with it where we pick a theme and play the music around that theme. And it's, we've had earth, we've had wind. No, we haven't had earth. We've had wind and fire. We got Earth this week, so that's what we got for our theme on that. And then from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s, not just the British Invasion, but from all over the world. And then, of course, next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be back with two more guests. But until then, as always, one thing left to say.